Welcome back to my love letter time machine. Hi, I'm Ingrid Birchall Hughes, and I'm serialising the love letters of my great-great-grandparents, Fred Shepherd and Janie Warburton. Travel 140 years back in time with me now, where we take a look at Victorian history through their eyes, and today we discover that Janie had been ice skating, and an almighty row blows up at the Cross Keys. Please be aware that the second half of this podcast concerns alcohol abuse and its effects in the family environment. A significant letter from Janie has gone missing, the dramatic and tantalising contents of which we can only infer from Fred's reply to it. In it was the disappointing news that James, Janie's father, seems to have got rather upset at the idea of Janie taking the piano with her when she gets married, and a comment that at some point Fred's mother Anne must have made, in passing, about Emma. This appears to have got back to Emma on the grapevine, with, I assume, predictable results. It's also really rather lovely to spot a detail that must mean that at some point Fred had gone to James and asked his prospective father-in-law for his daughter's hand in marriage, which does seem so very old-fashioned. And a conversation that I wish I could have been a fly on the wall for. However, before we get to all that, Fred also mentions that Janie, on her visit to Cleethorpes, had gone ice skating, which gave me pause because, it being August, I had no idea that there would have been skating facilities. So, before we get into the heated reports of Emma's behaviour, let's have a little look at the history of Victorian indoor ice rinks. Experiments with skating rinks utilising artificial ice started in the 1840s in London, and a small number of venues opened using a rather dubious substitute, which was a concoction of hog's lard and salts. The one that opened at the Baker Street Bazaar was advertised as being 3,000 square feet in extent. I mean, my nose is wrinkling at the idea of that much lard. The rinks were not long-lived, and it's possibly because the smell and getting the unpleasant stuff on your clothes encouraged the novelty to wear off rather quickly. During the 1860s and 1870s, early refrigeration technology for the transport of meat had started to emerge, which caught the attention of veterinarian and professor John Gamgee during a trip to the US to study Texas fever in cattle. It must have become one heck of a diversion, for his research not only led to the world's first refrigerated ships, but also the world's first ever mechanically frozen ice rink in 1876. It was rather delightfully called the Glacerium, and I think the world may well be the poorer for not sticking with the name. Opened in May 1876 in Chelsea, London, the floor of the Glacerium was laid with flattened copper piping and then flooded to a depth of approximately 2 to 3 inches. Then, through these pipes, was pumped a mixture of ether, glycerin, nitrogen peroxide derived from ammonia, and water, the reactions of which sufficiently lowered the temperature enough to freeze the water solid. Gamgee opened a second rink in Rusholme, Manchester, in 1877, thus bringing the technology to the north of England. Indeed, Southport, just north of Liverpool, opened their own Glacerium the following year, in 1878. For Janie to be skating in Cleethorpes in August 5 years later no longer seems quite so far-fetched, although I cannot find any reference to ice skating in Cleethorpes at that time. It's probably something that would require hitting the archives. I did wonder if the 7 years from its invention was sufficient time for travelling fairs to have acquired the technology and come up with their own portable versions, and if so, was a smaller rink in a tent part of the attractions at the seafront in Cleethorpes? Obviously, I am entirely speculating here. However, before I read the skating reference in the letters, I had no idea that public indoor ice rinks had been developed by the Victorians, and I think, for me at least, it serves as a reminder that I shouldn't underestimate just how much of the modern world was already in evidence in Fred and Janie's time. So let's get back to them, shall we? Here's Fred's reply to that mysterious missing letter of Janie's. Albert Terrace, Linthorpe Road, Middlesbrough, August the 20th, 1882. My own darling wife. I received your welcome letter this morning, for which I thank you, love, very much. I am glad that you got some skating in as well at Cleethorpes, love. I should have liked to have been there as well to skate with you. I feel sorry and just a little disappointed that your father did not give you the piano, my darling, because I had fully made up my mind that he would give it to you without any trouble. But it does not make much matter, love, as I have no doubt we shall soon be able to get one, and then we shall be all right, and perhaps a little more comfortable than we should had your father given it to you unwillingly. I should very much like to know what made him come to that decision, as I should have thought from his manner to me that he would have been pleased to give it to you. I am almost afraid, love, that I went about the business in the wrong manner. I think I ought to have asked him how much he was going to give you, as is customary, but instead of that, when he mentioned it, I said I did not want anything. You see, I was so pleased at the thought of getting you, after so much previous difficulty and vexation, that I felt perhaps foolishly generous. But it was really true what I said, as I only wanted you, my darling, and not any of his money or furniture. I know, my darling, that you will be pleased to make anybody comfortable that I invite to see us, and it would no doubt be better for your mother seeing us if you were nearer. But I would rather go 100 miles further north than that your Emma should come and disturb us, perhaps bring some trouble to us, for she seems to bring disaster to everybody connected with her, and my idea is to take you clear away from her. I am sorry that Betsy Frith cannot come to our wedding, love, because I should like you to see all your friends, and for them to see you at your very best, wifey, on that day. Fred Johnson has not written yet, love. I feel rather hurt that he has not written before this, especially as he must have a little time now he is at home. I have not written to John Mies yet, but I will do so next week and let you know the result. I had a letter from Ted this last week, in which he says that Fred told him, the last time he was over, that it was a settled thing between him and Miss Barton. Ted's idea is that Fred does not much care for her, but his mother and Annie have drawn him into it. Silly fellow. I will send you a list of addresses sometime this next week, love. With respect to the fire irons, love, which your Emma has so kindly promised to give you, do not take them, love, or anything else from her. I should not care for them if they were made of gold instead of iron. I am rather surprised at your mother wanting you to keep thick with her, as though we could not do without her when we are stuck fast. By all means, do not keep thick with her. I would not have you suffer her insults for all the towels and fire irons in the world. Besides, if she gives you anything, we shall almost be compelled to ask her to come and see us, and she might take it into her head to do so some time, and we should be compelled to be civil to her, having asked her to come. If your mother says anything about it, tell her that I have told you not to take them, and what is more, I am determined you shall not have anything from her. Who could have told Emma what my mother said at the first, love? I cannot think who could tell her. And as for calling my mother, as you say she did to Polly, I don't see what she has to call her about, as I am sure that my mother has been very careful, as she always is, what she says has been said about her. Even then, it was more particularly about you that she spoke, and only incidentally about your Emma. I should think the sting is in the truth of what she said, and I am sure that your Emma cannot with truth say anything bad about my mother. At least, I think not, and I know her perhaps a little more than Emma does. However, I will leave this subject, which at the best is disagreeable. You are so right, my darling. I have seen and felt your legs, and a little bit higher, with pleasure, as you know, and I shall not have the least objection to you doing ditto, love, some day. We shall have the lawful right then. It was very nice before, but I always felt as though I were taking advantage of your love for me, and I am expecting that it will be even nicer when we are married, because we should not have to fear being disturbed, and it must be more satisfactory when you feel that it is right and not doing you a probable injustice. After Friday night, I felt that it would not be wise to work so late, love, even if the work did not get done, for I could feel that it was doing me harm, and I must think of your future, my little wife. But if we do not work over, we generally play cards until 12, sometimes later. You see, it is this way. Sometimes Retchford, Jarvis or Robson comes up and wants to play, so that we have to oblige them. I wish we were married, love, then of course I should stop all that, for I am determined we will go to bed regularly at 10:30, of course if that is agreeable to you, my wife. We went up to Yarm yesterday and had a very enjoyable outing. We took the train to Stockton and then a boat from there to Yarm, about 7 miles. It was a glorious row. On the way, Phillips and I had a bathe. It was splendid. The tide was coming up the river beautifully. I had no idea it was so difficult to swim against it until yesterday. We could swim easily with it, but it was almost impossible to swim against it. But the river was only about 4 feet deep there, so it did not matter. We had a good ham and egg tea, and then had a look around the town. It is a funny old place, but very nice and quiet. And though it is so small, the principal street is almost as wide and long as the High Street in Stockton. We set off back at 8:30 and got to Stockton at 10:15, just in time to catch the 10:25 train to Middlesbrough. Not bad for 7 miles, is it? I feel rather stiff today, besides sundry blisters on my horny hands. I think I could spend a week there in summer, and have been thinking very likely we shall do so some time, as we cannot go to Redcar every year, and a country out would be nice. It will be a very pleasant outing for you, love, next summer, if you are good. I am thinking of going to Ayton next Saturday, and over Rosebery Topping, which was the pointed hill that we saw from Middlesbrough. I want to see these places so that I can take you when you come, which will relieve the dreary monotony of our married life. I shall have to close now, love. It is post time. I wish the 8 weeks would go. I do want to see you so much. I love you, my darling wife, more than ever. I will always remain, my darling, your loving, true and faithful husband, Fred. The following day, Janie visited the Woodhouse Flower Show, which is the village next to Handsworth. And there's a write-up of the show in the Sheffield Independent on Wednesday the 22nd of August. It reads, Woodhouse Flower Show, the second annual exhibition of the above society, took place yesterday in the cricket field. The weather during the early part of the day was cool and cloudy, and as the afternoon came, the wind cleared away the clouds, and the remainder of the day was beautifully fine. During the early part of the exhibition, the wind overturned the refreshment booth of Mrs. Davis, Royal Hotel, Woodhouse, and caused considerable damage to the glassware, as well as the loss of a large quantity of spirits, wine, etc. The tent which contained the needlework was also overthrown, but no one was seriously injured. The attendance was very large, and the receipts at the gates very largely in excess of last year. In addition to the show, the band of the Welsh Regiment, now stationed at Sheffield, and the Woodhouse Brass Band were in attendance and supplied music at intervals. There was also a troupe of performers under the direction of Mr. Burton of Sheffield, who catered for the amusement of the people. Numerous other amusements were also provided in the field, and the committee may congratulate themselves upon the success of their efforts. A novelty was also introduced in an exhibition of pigeons and canaries, and, indeed, these appeared to excite as much interest as anything on the ground. A large number of hothouse plants were lent, not for the competition, from the neighbouring nurseries. And then follows a list with all the prizes. It looks as if the Woodhouse Flower Show got off lightly with the weather, as I noticed in the report just above this was the headline, Gleedless Flower Show, Exhibition Wrecked. Gleedless is just 3 miles to the southwest of Handsworth and apparently more vulnerable to the wind, as the report says it overthrew the main exhibition tent and caused irreparable damage to all the exhibits. A different kind of bad weather is in evidence in Janie's next letter, where it would seem that the atmosphere at home is becoming stormy and dark. Thank you. Handsworth, August the 22nd, 1882. My own darling husband, I really could not find time to give you a few lines for today. We are so busy all the morning yesterday, and Annie wanted me to go by the 12:30 to get dinner over early. I do not like to disappoint you, love, if I can help it, so please forgive me once more. I received yours, for which I thank you, love. Oh, darling, I do wish you were here. I should like to see you. We have had a terrible row with our Emma this afternoon. You never heard such language to come out of a woman's mouth. I really could not stand much more of it. I am so thankful, darling, to think I shall be out of the hearing of such rows in the future. They make me quite miserable. I cannot describe what they are like. It was all nothing over a little thing, but she has had some drinks, and that is the cause of them generally. I have been in the bar nearly all day, so that has made her furious. What caused the row was this. I was baking two cakes for Mother. Emma was dusting the kitchen. I never spoke a word wrong to her. She banged my towel on the floor that I look in the oven with, took the hastener away. So I said to Mother in her hearing, "She has thrown this down. She may pick it up now." She does all such nasty little tricks as those when she is offended with me. I found a porter bottle that she'd had either whiskey or brandy in between the bed and mattress. So I gave it to Mother and told her to do as she liked about telling her about it. I did not say a word to her about it. She said I had been telling Mother a lot of tales. She judges me by herself when she says that. When Mother told her to pick the towel up, she would not, and cursed, and swore awfully. She wished I was stiff, and lots more awful things I dare not tell you. I really did not mean to cause a row, my darling. I am very sorry I did not pick up the towel and say nothing about it. But I cannot help feeling provoked. Such dirty little tricks do provoke you sometimes. A pet name for you is Toby, and your mother's Dame Shepherd. She always brings both of you in some way. She wished when you and I went in the train that it would smash us all to pieces. She said all that to my mother. I did not say anything to her after Mother had told her to pick it up. The quarrel was between them. Some part of it was meant for me, but I did not take it up. You don't know what she can and does say when in her raging temper. I don't know what she has to call your mother for, darling, but she makes something. The sting is in the truth of what your mother said. Your mother was coming this afternoon to see the garden, but the weather looked very dull, and so I think that has prevented her. I am very glad she did not, love, as our Emma is in such a temper. I should have been awfully grieved if she had insulted her, and she does not care when she is like that. I don't know how our Emma got to hear of your mother's remark, but, my darling, you will be sick and tired of hearing about her, so I will not say any more. It was a little after 1 o'clock when I got down to Annie yesterday. Annie could not go to the flower show. She wants to come to ours. Mr. Glover is coming for it. I wish you were, love. It does seem such a long time since you were here, and we have 8 more long weeks to get over before I can see you, my husband. But, love, when they are over, I shall be with you forever and your loving wife, and to be with somebody that does love me. I shall be happy, darling, and I know I can, and will make you so too. Oh, darling, I do wish you could be with me tonight, just to feel your arms around me, and one kiss from my husband, my everything. If I had not you, I think I could not get on at all. I do love you. I was going to tell you about the flower show, love. I took the children with me. Annie said they had to go there after dinner. Miss Mills, Tom Wortley, Sarah Jane Mills, and I went up to the show, and the children. It was very good indeed for the second show. I did wish you were there to take me round. Everything is more enjoyable when we are together. It was a very cold day. I was afraid I should take cold, but I have not felt it yet. There was a good many people there from Handsworth. I saw Annie Laverack, the Revitts, our John, and Charlie Thompson came with him. There was no dancing. They were afraid of it blowing the tent down. The wind was so rough. It did blow 2 down, the refreshment tent and another. After we came out of the field, Sissy and I and Miss Mills and the party went up to see the feast. Then we went down to Mr. Wortley's again. I did not want to stop long, But our John would not go before 10 minutes to 11. He was quite touched. I am so sorry, love. I hope you will not get to like it very much. Charlie Thompson went with him to sleep at our house, and they have gone to Woodhouse to the cricket match today. I had a dreadful headache all the way home. I did wish for you, darling, to lean on a bit. I wished many a time that I had not gone. I think it was the cold that made my head so bad. But I had to trudge on with Sissy and Miss Mills and get home the best I could. I feel all right today, love. I shall have to give up. It is post time, but we'll write more later on for Thursday. I love you more than ever. I remain your loving, true and faithful wife, Janie. Exchange, Middlesbrough, the North Eastern Steel Company Limited, August the 23rd, 1882. My own darling wife, I received your letter this morning, for which I thank you, love. I thought you would be busy on Monday with the flower show, so was hardly expecting one for yesterday. My dear little wife, I am so sorry to hear that you have had some more trouble at home. I wish I could take you away from it all at once, instead of waiting for October. But I cannot, you know, my darling, or I would do so. Neither can I come over until then, though I should like to see you and comfort you, as only I can do. But you know, wifey, we cannot afford it before October. You must try to bear it a little longer, darling. And then the happiest time of your life will begin as my loving and loved wife, for you may always rely on my love for you. But it is not necessary for me to tell you that, as you know it perfectly well. I am afraid, if I had been there yesterday, I should have had something to say about it, love, because it is impossible that there can be any peace or happiness at your house until she is better or out of it. Cannot your father do anything in the matter? Or has she got master both of your father and mother as well? I think you did quite right to mention the nasty, mean, contemptible little trick to your mother, love, even though it did provoke the row, for I have experienced such little tricks before and always found that there was no other remedy but to have it out and the cause removed. I have no doubt it was an account of the brandy bottle that you found that caused the row, but I think you did quite right in mentioning that too, love, because that also ought to be stopped. I am much obliged to her for her pet name for me, and also for my mother's. The latter is almost stylish, and if she had called her Madame, it would have been quite so. I think Mother would smote at the idea of calling her Dame. You must not take any notice of her awful wishes with regard to the train, etc. I mean, you must not let them frighten you, for imprecations like that cannot come to anything, you know. I cannot imagine anything but the most violent hatred prompting anybody to invent such awful wishes. I think that she is just a little envious of you, shall I say, your good fortune, love. At any rate, you will have a loving husband, and perhaps a prosperous one. But even if she is, I did not think that anybody, not really bad, would ever even think such things more than say them. I am pleased that my mother did not come up yesterday, as it might have vexed her, but I think she would have been with too much sense than to say much to her, or provoke her in any way. I wish I could have been with you at the flower show, love, to take care of you and bring you home. I should not let any fears of your John's sobriety bother you, love, as from what I have seen of him, I do not think he will get to like it much. From what has transpired with your Emma, I feel more determined than ever not to have anything from her. I wrote to John Mears yesterday, and will let you know what he says about attending as soon as I hear from him. I thought I would write today, love, because I might not have time tomorrow, as it is my usual monthly abomination, the board meeting. I love you, my darling, more than ever, and will always remain your loving, true and faithful husband, Fred. P.S. It's the Linthorpe flower show today, and has been pouring with rain almost all day. I am absolutely reeling at all of this. Janie's letter was just heartbreaking, wasn't it? I have to admit, the first time I read it, I cried. It's just really distressing. I know it's such a long time ago, but it feels like it was just yesterday, doesn't it? It's so poignant. Such a mess. I almost can't believe how vile Emma is behaving. I'm certain Fred is quite right. In fact, I would go so far to say that Emma isn't just a little envious. I think she's absolutely green with envy and indignation. How dare the youngest girl of the family get to have such a promising future? Emma's star sank a while ago, in such a terrible way, I know, and Janie's star is rising. I share Janie's concern, and right now, no, I would not put it past Emma to cause some upset at the wedding. Poor Janie. Then yes, poor Emma. It will be interesting to see if she calms down over the next few weeks, or gets even worse. Next time, Fred and Janie try to firm up who will be their bridesmaids and the best man for their wedding. It's all hands on deck at the Cross Keys as they get ready for the Handsworth Feast and Flower Show. And our Fred decides to go on an adventure up the mountain of Rosemary Topping, and in which he narrowly avoids killing his silly self. Thank you so much for listening to my Love Letter Time Machine. Can you help me get the podcast up the charts a bit more? So, if you haven't already, could you leave a review on your podcast app if there is a space to do so? It really helps with the algorithm. I'm still putting excerpts of Fred and Janie's letters on Instagram. I'm also having a bash at some reels. So that's My Love Letter Time Machine, or one word. And you are very welcome to write to me at myloveletterTimeMachine@gmail.com. Until next time, take care.